The views and opinions expressed by hosts and guests on Patriots with Grit do not necessarily reflect those of Patriots with Grit LLC, its founders, and owners.
Get ready for truth bombs and guidance from conservative leaders and entrepreneurs, from God-fearing, freedom-loving, truth-telling, patriotic Americans. Welcome to Patriots with Grit. Now let's jump into today's episode with your host, Darren Ross.
Hey everybody, we have an awesome guest returning today here at Patriots with Grit. He's an FBI whistleblower. He also worked deep within the bowels of cybersecurity in the swamp for 26 years.
And we're going to jump into the CTIL files and the dangers of Section 702 FISA of the National Defense Authorization Act.
We're going to be right back with our awesome guest today, Mr. Nate King.
You flu shot that body, and now you spike vax that body. You shouldn't get Spikevax if you've had an allergic reaction to Spikevax or its ingredients. Rare cases of inflammation of the heart muscle and outer lining have been reported. The most common side effects are injection site pain, redness and swelling, tiredness, headache, muscle pain, chills.
Actually, we could demonstrate the spike protein in practically all organs.
The vaccines have ravaged the population. The spike protein is proven to cause four major domains of disease.
Spikevax that body with Spikevax by Moderna.
Then you can see also that the nerve cells express the spike protein. And I personally would prefer to use my nerve cells for thinking and not for producing the spike protein.
Hey, everybody. I think most of you know that one of our favorite things here to do is to blow the whistle on all the corruption going on in the government with all the nefarious actors. We have a great guest today. Nate King is back with us. He is a run for political office in the great state of West Virginia. He is a whistleblower, Randy.
Yes.
And a pretty good one at that. We're going to dig in.
Yeah, high-level whistleblower.
High-level whistleblower. And we're going to dig in today to a lot of things. Includes World Economic Forum, FISA, and also some of the nefarious activities that your opponent is doing to you there in the great state of West Virginia. Nate, tell us a little bit about this, and let's get this interview on the road.
All right. Well, you know, there's been so much stuff in the news lately, and it's almost mind-blowing just how much, you know, is hitting the media cycle every day, and it's easy for people to miss stuff when there's so much stuff going on. So, you know, one of the things that we were talking about before the show, you know, that I had brought up was that, you know, we just saw the NDAA that was passed, and they slipped in a renewal of Section 702 of FISA. So Section 702, for those of you that don't know what that is the warrantless searches that is done on our digital data. Now, I was read on to that program. I was read on to FISA and several other special access programs when I was working for MAR-4 Cyber and detached to NSA. And I can tell you, it is one of the most intrusive tools in the arsenal at the NSA. Now, that tool, when I was read onto it, I had signed non-disclosure agreements. I'd also signed, you know, user agreements that basically said if I use this tool inappropriately, I was looking at 10 years in jail, because essentially it gives you the ability to be able to violate people's you know, constitutional rights. So first and foremost, it was never to be used on an American citizen. It was also never to be used on American soil. And but unfortunately, what we've seen is we've seen that the FBI has abused this thing over and over and over again. 275,000 times, in fact, it's been used primarily against January Sixers. It's been used against BLM. It's been used against the George Floyd protesters. I mean, this is a bipartisan issue. And it's not just a matter of Republicans needing to wake up, but Democrats need to wake up, too. Because I guarantee you, they're probably also using it on members of Congress and judges and anybody else that they can dig dirt on and basically turn their phone into a spying device and then collect dirt so that they can blackmail them and, you know, and have leverage over them. So I'm very concerned about this. I don't believe this tool should ever be allowed at all to be used by any domestic agency, and the FBI certainly is that. I don't necessarily have a problem with this tool being used by our military against our foreign adversaries, but it should never be in the hands of a domestic agency ever. And so I am very disappointed, quite frankly, you know, even in our new Speaker of the House, you know, for allowing this bill to go forward with that in there. Now, they did only extend it for 4 months, but still, they extended it for 4 months right before the election. So what? So that they can set Trump up again? That's what I, you know, that's what I see with this. They used it to spy on Trump's campaign before with, you know, Operation Crossfire Hurricane. And so now they've basically authorized the FBI to use it again for another 4 months so that, you know, as far as I'm concerned, they're going to try to use this to set him up again and spy on his campaign again. This is absolutely uncalled for.
Nate, how many Republicans voted for that?
Jeez, too many.
I think it was seven, but it might may have been 14. I don't remember.
No. I believe it was 70. You can't quote me on that because I haven't looked at the article recently, but I want to say it was 70. But it's ridiculous. You know, why in the world anybody would vote for this? Even Democrats. Like I said, it's been used to spy on those on the left as well. ACLU is even out, you know, saying this needs to go away. So, I mean, you know, there's an area here for common ground. But the fact is everyone in Congress has sworn an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And this tool allows for them to violate people's Fourth Amendment rights.
Nate, what percent, in your opinion, of Americans even know anything about what we're talking about? And if they do, they're just okay with it?
I think the majority of Americans probably don't know about this. And I think it's not that they're okay with it. I just think that most people don't understand the gravity of it. They think, you know, who cares about what, nobody's going to care about little old me, you know, at my, you know, family farm or whatever. But I'll tell you what, when they start, you know, knocking on your door because they want to collect your guns or because they want to know why you didn't, you know, come down and get vaccinated or because they want to know, you know, why you were, you know, having a conversation on chat with, you know, on private message with somebody, you know, talking about disparaging things about, you know, President Joe Biden. Then people are going to wake up, but by then it'll be too late.
It's too late.
But do you think it'll ever come to that, Nate? I mean, we were talking off air before the show today that literally every piece of technology that we use today, whether it's your cell phone, whether it's Facebook Messenger, whether it's Instagram, whether it's TikTok, whether it's text message, anything at all is digitally tracked, traced, and surveilled. I don't think most people, in my opinion, I don't think most people even think about that. I think they're willing to say and do and give up about any piece of information about anything, never even questioning who's seeing it and who's spying on it.
Well, the courts, the Supreme Court has already ruled that the government is not allowed to violate our rights via proxy of another company. And yet that is exactly what they've been doing. Mm. We know from the Twitter files that they were paying $9 million a year in order to access basically have backdoor access into Twitter. And they were basically, you know, changing the narrative, you know, on the Hunter Biden laptop. They were saying that it was Russian disinformation, and they got them to block, you know, people that were, you know, trying to, you know, talk about that, which is election interference. So the FBI basically was the largest interferer in our elections. Then on top of that, you also had them, and this was according to Elon Musk himself, in his last interview that he did with Tucker Carlson while Tucker Carlson was still on Fox News. He told Tucker Carlson that when he went into it took over Twitter, that he found that the government had way more control and access than he even realized. And Tucker Carlson asked him, even our private DMs? And he said yes, which means they had direct access to things that we have a presumption of privacy on. But I can tell you right now, they don't care. Those privacy statements, they have immunity agreements. And I've talked about this before, you know, which the reason I talk about it is because it's unconstitutional. Like I said, the courts have already said that it's not allowed, and yet they've been doing it. They've been spying on us through these different companies. And so we should be very careful about what we say, you know, on a digital platform. But the reality is we shouldn't have to be careful about anything. You know, I think it was Thomas Jefferson that said that when the government fears the people, there's liberty. But when the people fear the government, there's tyranny. And we're facing now a situation where the people are afraid to speak out. They certainly are afraid to show up and make their grievances known.
Amen.
And assemble and make their grievances known because of what they've done on January 6th, where they've denied people their right to due process. But, you know, this Section 702, the article that I sent you on this, what it shows is that they primarily, the number one area where they've used this was to spy on people who were there on January 6th. They've used it to look at their communications, to look at who was, communicating. And they've done this without a warrant. And in fact, you have companies that are colluding with the government to violate our rights, like Bank of America, who turned over all of the records of anybody that used their credit card in Washington, D.C. on January 6th. They did that without a warrant. So, you know, there's things that are going on here. And quite honestly, Congress has the responsibility to protect us and to protect the Constitution. They sworn that oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And the fact is we got a lot of domestic enemies. And Congress needs, in my opinion, to formulate an Article I tribunal, and they need to bring these people to justice. And that includes the leadership in these companies. It includes the public officials that have wantonly violated our constitutional rights, and these people need to be tried.
And okay, so that's accountability. And what basically what you said describes no control. People, even in the corporate levels, doing just as they sweet please to do.
That's right.
Well, I know the feds right. have their back, but Nate, you mentioned just a while ago, a few months back, I was at an event and I was talking to a gentleman probably in his late 60s, maybe early 70s. And we had the conversation of J6, and he said I believe he and his wife were there and, just milling around on the outskirts of the grounds and everything. Yep. And 3 or 4 months later, he gets a phone call. This guy's from North Dakota, lives out in the middle of nowhere, gets a call on his phone, answers a phone. This is so-and-so with the FBI. We'd like to talk to you about your whereabouts and your purpose of being where you were on January 6th, 2021. And he's like, okay, well, when would you like to meet and talk? He's like, FBI guys, well, we'll be there in about 10 minutes. So they get there and they hear this knock on the door. And of course, he and his wife, invite him in, come on in, sit down. She's like, well, I'd like to record this. Oh, no, ma'am, you're not allowed to record this. And I said, well, first of all, how did they even know you were there? And he said, bank records. Bank of America, bank records, based on where they ate, where they stayed, what they purchased. And I'm like, we left Bank of America, my family did, probably 8 or 10 years ago, just because of all the nonsense they did. But I could not believe, and this was over, this was several months ago, I'm like, come on, man. Come on, man. Now, using the banks to do this?
That's right. That's right. And I'll give a word of advice to anybody listening. If the FBI comes knocking at your door, be polite, but you tell them, unless you have a warrant, I have nothing to, I'm not letting you in my house.
Go pound sand.
Yeah.
Yep, that's right. And then the next, words out of your mouth should be, if they continue talking to you, I have nothing to say to you without a lawyer present. You should not. Absolutely should not cooperate with the FBI in talking to them about anything, because if they're coming to your door, the likelihood is that somebody there is likely there to try to set you up, trap you. Remember what they did to General Flynn. Mm-hmm. Remember what they did. What did they charge him with? They charged him with lying to, the FBI. And I think what they did was they asked him what time were you at some event? He was off by 15 minutes or whatever, an hour, he didn't know the exact time. Right. And so they said that he was lying to the FBI. They used these bullcrap charges to go after people.
Since I'm a numbers guy, I always like to deal in numbers and percentages. Again, what percent of Americans do you think if they would get that knock on the door and there's, hi, I'm so-and-so with the FBI. What percent of people do you think would actually say, oh, okay, come on in, let's talk. I mean, how many would open their door and welcome them?
I think most Americans would, because we've been conditioned, to obey authority and to obey our police officers and our sheriffs and the FBI and to trust, we've been conditioned to trust people. And the fact is, it's like, I remember, I think it was my grandmother told me once, she didn't care if a man was a minister. She was never going to just outright trust somebody just because they have a title, because they wear a collar or they wear a badge or something like that. There's enough people who have abused their power to know that you should not ever just have carte blanche, trust for somebody simply because of their title or their position.
Smart grandma.
Well, and it's been a couple of years ago, I had mentioned to our local sheriff here, I said, what do we do if the FBI or ATF shows up at our door? And he says, your first call better be to me, because they don't have jurisdiction in my county.
But then again, most people think they do.
I know.
Until we went on this journey, Nate and Randy. I mean, I personally, until all the COVID nonsense started 3 or 4 years ago, I always thought the hierarchy was federal, state, county. And once we dig in and start doing our research and due diligence, it's like, I think we've been taught up,
kind of upside down,
conned over the years. And really, it's county, state, federal. And it's, again, most people don't know that, in my opinion. Am I right or am I off base there, Nate?
No, you're absolutely right. In fact, there's even another, level of authority that exists, and that's our own personal, we have a right to make a citizen's arrest. You know, we have a right to carry. We have a right to defend ourselves. In fact, you go back to the earliest times in America, the militia, the highly qualified and armed militia, what they were was they were a group of citizens that were essentially given jurisdiction by the court to go, and make arrests of public officials. And so you had what was called a people's grand jury. And so if the citizen a grand jury, they would order the militia, almost like a posse, to go and make the arrest of the public official. So
wouldn't that be brilliant?
And I could see that right now, because I know there's some counties and states that are doing this jural assembly process. And, they're exploring the militia part of it, which is a very delicate situation. But if you had 20, 30 people get together and go arrest a politician in your county, you'd all be in prison.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You're right. So that's why that's why the court. So that's where if a judge makes the order or a grand jury gives a grand jury summons and they say, hey, we're giving you authority as a trained militia to go and make the arrest of a public official, there does need to be a judicial process in this. But the fact is that's where it talks about a well-trained militia, because you can't just have people, going off and being vigilantes and all of that. But if they're trained and they understand what the laws and they understand what the rules and they understand the Constitution, and they've been, given the authority to go and do this, I mean, who is it that gives the police the authority to go do, issue a search or to make an arrest? It's a judge. So what's the difference between the police doing it or a citizens, militia group? I mean, honestly, that's what it was for. It was it was intended so that they could actually, judiciously deal with these issues and public corruption. The problem is that the grand jury has been captured, by the Justice Department.
Amen.
And so now, now they basically, they own it, they control it. And of course, they're never going to investigate themselves.
Nope.
The FBI is never going to investigate. The DOJ is never going to indict themselves. And this here stands the problem. And so there is an issue of jurisdiction. And, and the problem is that we need to have some sort of balance in place where there is some sort of opposing force, to these federal agencies so that people can actually be held accountable when they violate the law. I was talking to a state police retired guy who's part of my volunteers, and he was telling me, if while he was with the state police, if he ever violated somebody's rights, the FBI could come and arrest him and charge him with deprivation of rights under color of law. But if the FBI does it, nobody goes and arrests them for doing it.
Nope.
And in fact, they did it 275,000 times, according to that article. And yet not a single FBI person that I know of was charged and tried for deprivation of rights under color of law, which carries sentences all the way up to life in prison.
Well, let's tag on to this, because if we have this scenario where you're saying we don't let the FBI in unless they have a warrant, well, aren't we seeing that we're getting these judges? And I don't know a lot about how it all laid out, but the FISA judges giving basically baseless warrants, evidenceless warrants?
Yes. So I'll give you a perfect example from my own personal experience. I was raided by 16 FBI agents 4 months after I finished turning over evidence to the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence and Senate Select Committee on Intelligence with permission by the Department of Justice Inspector General Michael Horowitz. I was protected under the Intelligence Community Whistleblower Protection Act. It took me almost a year to get through the process. I was told I was authorized to maintain the copy of the thumb drive, because if either of those committees did nothing, then I could take it to the Judiciary Committee or another committee. The FBI raided my home with 16 agents. when the Daily Caller news source, when they ended up putting a FOIA request on the Maryland magistrate that signed off on the search warrant for them to come to my house, they asked a singular question, and they got with their lawyers to figure out whether or not this was going to be, you know, they would have any way of wiggling out of this. And there was no way, because they, of course, asked the U.S. attorney, you know, why did you raid a whistleblower? And he said, well, we can't, you know, talk about ongoing investigations. So they got with their lawyers and they said, okay, what's a question we can ask? And there's no way they can get out of it. And the question they came up with was the judge notified that Nate Kane was a protected whistleblower under the Intelligence Community Whistleblower Protection Act, and a Clinton appointed judge. Now think about that. All right. Who did I blow the whistle on? Hillary Clinton. A Clinton appointed judge ended up putting a seal on that answer. And then she put a seal on her justification for putting a seal on that answer.
They can just cover their own tracks. I mean, they do what they want.
Completely corrupt. It is completely corrupt. And you know what? Yes, these judges need to be impeached and they should be put on trial.
Yes.
Well, that's nice. You're being way too nice, Nate. It's around the holidays right now, so Nate's being way too nice.
He's feeling joyful.
Yeah. Nate, in your opinion, again, I'm going back to numbers and percentages. What time frame was it? And, you know, when did the FBI and a lot of these nefarious three-letter agencies just start to go rogue? Was it right around COVID? Has it been going on long before COVID?
No, it's been going on.
We didn't know
it. It's been going on much longer. I mean, ultimately, there were major changes. There's been problems that have gone back all the way to the Patriot Act being formed after 9/11. You know, there's been multiple instances of its abuse, but most of the abuse was done, you know, against, you know, people who were in the Muslim community. And I don't think most, you know, Americans really were paying attention, you know, because we all wanted to feel safe. Well, now it's been turned against conservatives, against Trump lovers, against Christians, against pro-lifers, against Catholics that attend Latin Mass, against parents that go to school board meetings. It has literally been turned against half of the American people. And the problem is that there were changes that were made in Obama's very last, I think it was his last week or last couple of weeks in office. He made some changes so that data could be passed between federal agencies, between the intelligence community. In other words, if you unmask something, you could basically transfer that data to the FBI from the NSA and to the CIA or wherever. And in the past, you could not send something that was unmasked between agency. They had to issue their own search to find that information. And that was done away with. And the reason for that was because they don't want it being used on American citizens. And so, but they've, unfortunately, they changed those rules so that they could spy on Trump, so that they could facilitate the, you know, the operation against Trump's campaign and against his presidency. It was basically a coup. You know, it was an attempted coup. You know, you talk about an insurrection. The insurrection was by the intelligence community against Donald Trump. And that is the problem. I had heard my whistleblowing attorney once told me that he ate lunch with one of the former CIA directors, and he didn't tell me which one it was, but he said that he had lunch with him on a regular basis. And he told me that he was told by a former CIA director that the most dangerous threat to our Constitution and our Republican form of government is the intelligence community, that they could destroy this country in a heartbeat because of the amount of power that they have. And let's not forget, you know, the FBI from its very inception had problems. Remember, J. Edgar Hoover had a habit of getting dirt on every politician and every, you know, corporate executive that he could. And then he would use that dirt to, you know, continue to get his budget and stay in office. I mean, that's what he did. He blackmailed these people. So I guarantee you, you know, what started, it was in its inception, you know, with the FBI. It's continued on. It's just taken a different form. And now it's been, you know, basically been given steroids with this whole digital world that we're living in now.
So, Nate, there's so many three-letter agencies, DOJ, FBI, CIA. Today, here we are, middle end of 2023. What percent of those guys are on the good side of the fence?
You know, it's a hard question to know, because the fact is that let's say that 80% of them, okay, are decent guys. We know just from science, you know, from you know, studies that have been done at universities, that anytime somebody is under authority, they're more likely to do something without thinking twice about it because they've been ordered to do it. And the problem is that a lot of the people in the FBI, we see this in police forces, we see it even with sheriff's departments. You know, you see somebody gives an unlawful order and nobody questions it. They just go right along with it and they do what they're told. And the very few that stand out, man, they bring the book down. I mean, look at me, a perfect example. You know, why do you think they came after me with 16 agents and tried to destroy my life and my family? The reason is because they wanted to send a message to everybody else in the agency. Blow the whistle. This is what we're going to do to you. Now, in my case, because I was a cybersecurity expert of 26 years, it didn't take long for me to find another job. But for somebody who's an FBI agent who's got maybe 5 years away from, you know, retirement, do you think he's going to blow the whistle even if he sees something egregious? The likelihood is that the majority of them don't have the guts to blow the whistle. And the few that do, they ruin their lives. They destroy their pension. They take everything from them. They put them in limbo so that they can't get another job, that, you know, while they're waiting on appeal. And they, you know, are put on leave without pay. They destroy these people's lives. I've known a number of them. Steve Friend, you know, comes to mind. Kyle Serafin, Garrett O'Boyle. I know these guys personally, and I will tell you, they're good, upstanding men that did the right thing. But, you know, they were treated terribly for basically exposing corruption within the FBI. And in their cases, because they were agents, what are they going to do? Go back to being a beat cop? Right. You know, they have to basically start all over again. So, you know, we have a major problem. And if the Congress does not deal with, you know, Congress has a power that they, for whatever reason, have not used. I don't know why they won't. It's the power of the purse. The only thing that I can think of is why maybe they haven't used it is because we don't know what blackmail they have against them.
Oh, true. Yeah. So,
I mean, look at this video that just came out of this staffer that was having gay sex in the Senate, you know, chambers, right?
I didn't see that on mainstream media, Nate. I mean, for some reason, did NBC or CBS or ABC or MSNBC just fail to put that up? Or did we have to see it on all the back channels?
I guess it wasn't interesting to them. But, you know,
probably common practice.
Yeah, you know, right.
A couple days ago, we had Marjorie Taylor Greene on, and literally like an hour and a half before she came on our show, her staffers sent her video footage of what they would call an insurrection going on in the Capitol, pro-Hamas, and all these pro-Hamas supporters were in there. And I'm like, you know, I just can't wait to see how long it's going to take for them to be hunted down, captured, and sentenced by the feds.
They weren't even charged with, disrupting an official proceeding, which is what they've charged. That's what they've thrown at everybody on January 6th, which is what gives you 20 years, you know, from the difference between, you know, a trespassing misdemeanor and disrupting, you know, an official proceeding, which they said, you know, the maximum sentence is 20 years. So, you know, imagine these guys that, you know, Hamas, well, you know, remember, you had members of Congress that came and did a sit-in. I think it was after like the school shooting down in Florida. You know, they wanted more gun control, and they came and did a sit-in and disrupted, you know, the official proceeding. No, none of them were charged. So it's crazy. You know, there's such a double standard. And that to me is what's most dangerous thing in this whole thing, is that the American people are only going to tolerate this crap for so long. Eventually they're going to say, you know what? I've had it. I'm sick of this crap. And, you know, and I'm not going to take it anymore. And well, my concern is that
I don't know why they keep taking it now. I thought it would have been, months ago.
The only reason I think that people haven't is because conservatives, by the very nature of that word conservative, we tend to not overreact. We tend to be very thoughtful, and we think about what we're going to do. We think about the consequences. I know I do. And I know that I think about, you know, if we ended up at some sort of civil war, I don't want that, because I know in the end it's going to be bloody. And, you know, the last civil war that we had, we lost more people in that civil war than we did in any of all of our other wars. And so, you know, if we had something like that, it's not going to be good. And you don't think our enemies would be, you know, I think they're pushing us that. I think they're trying to get us to do that sort of thing. So I look at it like this. So there are forces that are pushing us towards that. They are pushing us towards a separation of the states. They are pushing us towards civil war. They are pushing us towards that by, I mean, you look at January 6th, if there was another stolen election, you know, and I don't care what anybody says, the fact that they shut down the counting at midnight, you know, and then they come back at 3 a.m. or 6 a.m. and all of a sudden they had find out that they had continued counting, you know, through the night, and they added a whole bunch of new, you know, lots of ballots that came in under cover of darkness. That is cheating. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure that out. I don't, regardless of whatever happened with the machines, regardless of whether somebody hacked our elections, none of that is as relevant as the fact that they shut down the count, sent all the poll watchers home, and then they continued counting after they sent the poll watchers home. And then in Georgia, it just came out that there were 100,000, over 100,000 ballots, over 100,000 that had no folds in them at all, no creases. How do you fold up a ballot and mail it in if it has no folds? So there were 100,000 of the ballots that the court said, yes, they have a right to inspect these ballots. Turns out that these Georgian public officials destroyed these 100,000 ballots, which they're not lawfully allowed to do under the Civil Rights Act of 1968. You're required to maintain every record pertinent to voting in a federal election for 22 months. That's the law.
But they probably got rid of them at 23.
Oh, no. They got rid of them. They got rid of them day one because they want to make sure.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, they got rid of them because they knew they were fake ballots. These were counterfeit ballots. But how do you prove that if you can't go and do an audit? So now you can't even do an audit. So how in the hell can they consider, you know, this election that we had in 2020 legitimate? This is why there were people that were there at the Capitol that were making their grievances known to their government to say, do not certify this election, because it was a lie. There was no true recount. You can't recount something if you don't have the ballots. So, and not only that, but you'll remember the FBI came in and brought a shredding truck, you know, to Georgia. So they were helping. I'm telling you, man, this whole thing, do you think the people of America are going to stand for that kind of thing again? I'll tell you, if that happens again, you're not going to see people showing up to protest at the Capitol unarmed.
Exactly.
I promise you. Now, I don't want that because, like I said, I think that is their goal. That is their aim. They want to bring down the hammer on all of us. And so they're trying to provoke a reaction. And this is the part that we need to be smart and understand. Mm-hmm. Our only hope for restoring our nation without bloodshed is through the political process. And that means that we've got to elect people who are not going to be bought and paid for, who are not going to be agents of the Podestas or agents of Soros or agents of some special interest group. We need to make sure that these people are actually representing us. You know, I can't tell you how many people I've talked to as I've traveled around my state, and I hear more and more people say, you know, that they feel like they're forgotten. They feel like they send these politicians down there and they say, you know, they come out here and they talk a good game and they say all these things they're going to do for us. And then they go down there and they forget all about us. This is what I've heard over and over and over again. And so, you know, this is the problem, is that they end up, beholden to these lobbyists. So one of the things that I've said is look, I'm not going to meet with a lobbyist unless they agree for our conversation to be recorded, and I'm going to make it public immediately. I'm going to lead by example and make sure that people can see how the sausage is being made. I've got nothing to hide.
I like seeing the sausage being made. I love that.
And right now, my campaign has brought in about $70,000 in donations, but every donation that's come in has come from an individual. Not a single dime has come from a corporation or from some special interest group or some super PAC or PAC. None of that. Why? Well, partly because they're all supporting my opponent. They're trying to influence him. You know, he's got 13 energy companies that are, you know, basically donating from their company to his campaign. Me, You know who I'm going and talking to? I'm talking to the individual mineral owners. You know, we talked a little bit about that beforehand. I'm going and talking to the actual people who vote, and I'm asking for their support. And I've got people who are donating to my campaign from 39 different states, because it's not just a matter of them being able to vote for me. The fact is there's a lot of people in other states that might not be able to vote for me, but I can vote for them every time that I support and back up their constitutional rights. And I ensure that those constitutional rights are protected and that we don't have abuses of power going on by our federal government. That is where I can vote for the American people, and I can vote for our Constitution and support them. So it's important that we support good candidates all over the country, not just in our states. I had a guy who's one of my largest donors, and he's from Portland, Oregon. Now, why in the heck would somebody in Portland, Oregon, you want to donate to me? I didn't call him. He called our campaign, and he sent in a check for $2,000. Why? Because he knows he doesn't have a chance in hell of getting a decent member of Congress in his state.
No.
And so he's supporting me to make sure that there's somebody who's going to go after these guys and who's going to call them out and not be afraid.
You're still looking good.
I'm still feeling good. You know, I've got all your MyPillow products. Mattress topper, bed sheets, MyPillows, towels, slippers, blankets, sleepwear.
Whoa, Charles. Everyone now can get MyPillow products at huge discounts at MyPillow.com. That's right. Now's the time to go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code to take advantage of our 3-in-1 sale. We're bringing you exciting new products, overstock specials, and closeout deals you won't find anywhere else. For example, when you buy one of our brand new MyPillow 2.0s, you get another one absolutely free. And with our overstock sale, you save 50% on our luxurious Giza Dream bed sheets. That's as low as $29.99 for the best sheets ever. And with our biggest closeout special, you get our all-season slippers for only $35. Or our sandals and slides for just $25. Quantities are limited, and once they're gone, they're gone.
Well, we asked this to Marjorie Taylor Greene the other night. If, you know, there's a lot of great people out there that could represent well in Congress and represent the people. But the good people that understand middle-class living don't have the funds and the ability to be endorsed by these big lobbyists and big corporations. You know, and I'm preaching to the choir here.
Bought and paid for.
But they're bought and paid for. So when they get in there, these people that are getting in there are just, they're just catering to what their donors are giving them. And we got to get more people that have the brains and the power to understand middle-class people and common decisions. And I want to add one other thing. The other thing is, too, there's got to be a system where they can't stack a simple, you know, take a simple subject and stack it into a 5,000-page document and expect people to review it and understand it and have to accept it all.
Yeah, and within 24 hours or 48 hours, they do that crap all the time. That stuff's got to stop. You know, there is, you know, I don't have a problem with having some big bill or whatever, but you need time to be able to review it. There needs to be time for debate. And the problem is that they do those things intentionally, and they do it right before recess so that way they can get people to vote for, so they can get out of there. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. They use all kinds of tactics. But back to the issue of what you were talking about with, you know, you've got all these candidates that are good candidates like myself, that actually, you know, I have my own small business. You know, I understand what, you know, what these taxes and these regulations do, you know, to, you know, entrepreneurial spirit in America. It crushes it.
100%.
You know? And so I understand that. Most of these politicians never worked a day in their life other than be a politician, you know, and it's like these guys, you know, they have never owned a business. You know, many of them have never had any kids, never raised a family. You know, there should be qualifications, right? You know, we know from the Bible that the Bible says that an elder, you know, should be, you know, the husband of but one wife, should be, you know, have respectable children, should, you know, they lay out some things, and these are like common sense things, right? Somebody who's going to be a leader should already be a leader at home, should already be somebody that's respectable. And what ends up happening is we've got all these people, quite honestly, they're not qualified. I mean, you got, what is her name? Angelina Ocasio-Cortez, you know, who basically was a bartender, you know, and, you know, she, now, truth be said, you know, it's funny. You could tell she's been around for a while now. She's actually starting to think about some things and talk about some things. I don't agree with her on much, but there's a couple of things that she said recently that were actually quite insightful. I was like, wow, she must actually be paying attention. And but the, you know,
straight
you know
from
somebody,
mouth.
You know somebody put her up to it to running. You know, and that's the thing is we get these people in there. And, you know, and they're because they have a name, you know, it's like Arnold Schwarzenegger, right? That guy was governor of California. And this is the same guy who during COVID said, screw your freedom. You know, what the hell?
I don't think he said that, but he said something similar.
Yeah. He said, you know, you want to you talk about your freedom. Well, screw your freedom. Mm-hmm. You know, he basically don't care that, you know, that people have a right to not have to put a mask on or not be vaccinated, you know, and but you got this authoritarian sweep that's coming across our country, and we got to put a stop to it because
for
it
some
is
reason, we haven't caught on to that authoritarian sweep here, Randy.
No.
And most of our listeners haven't either. Nate, you mentioned two words a while ago. You mentioned the word opponent and you mentioned the word Podesta. Is there a little correlation there between the two?
Yes, there is. So my opponent, Riley Moore, he is our treasurer of our state. And he was a one-term delegate. He lost his second term, and then he got a cushy job inside the state government that set him up to run for treasurer. His aunt is Shelley Moore Capito, our U.S. senator, a Republican. She's a Republican in name only, though. In fact, I don't know very many conservative Republicans at all. I've not met one that likes her. She voted for the Green New Deal. She voted for the gay marriage, you know, federal amendment. She has voted totally. Her voting record is actually worse than the Democrat senator that we have, Joe Manchin. And she's got a worse liberty score. And that is so her son is running for governor and her nephew is running for Congress. So you got that three-headed hydra trying to take over the state. So because of that, he has all of her donors that are donating to him. Plus, he had a background in, before he got into politics, he was the vice president of the Podesta Group. This is this very same Podesta Group who John Podesta was Hillary Clinton's campaign chairman. He was Bill Clinton's chief of staff. I mean, he's very tied in with the Obamas, with the Bidens. He's now Biden's green energy czar. And then Tony Podesta now runs the lobbying group, but their primary specialty is they do a lot of lobbying on behalf of foreign governments. So while he was working for the Podesta Group as their VP, he was a foreign registered agent with the Socialist Republic of Vietnam, with Azerbaijan, with Iraq, with Somalia. You know, great countries here, you know, and then with Hong Kong. And then I think he was also a lobbyist in the Ukraine for the European, what the heck was it called? The basically it was the Ukrainian ministry. He was basically, you know, working on their behalf, lobbying as an unregistered lobbyist and somehow got away with that, you know, when Manafort was thrown in jail for that very same thing. So anybody that thinks that this guy doesn't have some, you know, serious connections to some very bad people, you know, they're fooling themselves. He does play a very, you know, like I said, he's done a very good job of repairing his image and, you know, trying to hide that past. He doesn't talk about it ever. He doesn't talk about his connections there. You know, he's very careful to, you know, tout that he's a conservative, and he talks about how he fought against ESG and, you know, went against BlackRock and, you know, in divesting, you know, West Virginia, you know, from BlackRock. And yet he sat on the Consolidated Pension Review Board, attended one meeting, and there's still $600 million invested in BlackRock. And then you have Form Energy, which he sat on he was one of the board of directors of the West Virginia Economic Development Authority, which gave $290 million of our taxpayers' dollars here in West Virginia to Form Energy, a company that was founded by George Soros, Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg, Jeff Bezos, Jack Ma, Tom Strayer. It has BlackRock as one of their major investors. And of course, Who sits on the board of directors for that company and who's the chairman of their board? None other than Chelsea Clinton's husband. I mean, you can't get any more corrupt than what you see here. The person who brought that deal to West Virginia was none other than John Podesta. And the Podesta group lobbied on behalf of Form Energy to give their battery factories, the one here in Weirton and the one in Minneapolis, Minnesota, on the Mississippi River, to give them three exemptions. They got an exemption allowing them to not have to meet the EPA's water pollution standards. They got an exemption that basically allows them to not be liable in the event of a toxic spill on the Ohio River and the Mississippi River. Yes, and they got an exemption allowing them to source materials from China. It does not get any more corrupt than that. Riley Moore, he didn't vote in the first amount of money that was $75 million, but in the second amount of money, his proxy voted on his behalf, so that way his name doesn't show up. You know, if you dig, you can find these things out, but the average person's not going to see that. They're just going to go, oh, well, Riley Moore's name's not on that vote. No, his proxy is, though, which means he was voting on behalf of Riley Moore to give the $215 million in the second round of money. So for somebody that claims to be doing what he can to fight against ESG, you know, he talks out of both sides of his mouth. And that's the kind of crap that, unfortunately, we're dealing with here in West Virginia. And I think there's probably many other states where you have those types of, establishment candidates. This guy was endorsed by none other than McCarthy. He was one of McCarthy's very first endorsements. And why is that? Because they want to make sure that they got their guy in there that they can control. So he was a fellow for the Center for New American Security. You know who the number one donor for that is? George Soros's Open Societies Foundation. So this is who you're dealing with. The difference is, I spent my life serving my country. I was a U.S. Army soldier. Then I went and became a Navy civilian and then a Marine Corps civilian. And then I went working for the FBI. And while I was there, I risked everything to blow the whistle on the senior leadership at the FBI, senior leadership at the DOJ, the Russian intelligence agents, and yes, Hillary Clinton herself. And, ended up getting raided. I got poisoned twice. I had my lug nuts loosened on my vehicle right before a long trip. I mean, these people came after me with everything they had. And by God's grace, I'm still standing here. But I think I've proven to the people of West Virginia and to the American people that I'm willing to do what it takes to try to save our country.
I'm speechless because I'm sitting here thinking about the swamp in general. And that's one seed floating in the swamp that's wanting to take root. How many other ones are already taking root? And my question is, if everybody understood and was able to find the information, like you just put all the dots together, I mean, we're overwhelmed. I'm overwhelmed at this very moment. And it's like, how did this man get on the ballot?
Because his aunt is a very powerful senator on many appropriations committees. That's why.
A
lot of money, a lot of special interests. Like I said, he's got 18 different energy companies that are the companies have donated to him, not people, not individual contributions. I'm talking about the companies through their PACs and things like that have donated to his campaign. So when you think about that, is he going to be paying attention to the individual mineral rights of these people who are getting screwed over by the oil and gas companies that are cheating them out of, 26% of the market value of the minerals being taken out of their ground? No, he's going to be paying attention to, the donors, class that are basically donating. Remember, the individuals in the state, they can't just go and hire, a lobbyist to go lobby on behalf of their issues. They're supposed to be represented by the representative. They shouldn't have to have a lobbyist. They should be able to go directly to the representative. But no, what ends up happening is these companies, these corporations, these special interest groups, they're the ones who hire the lobbyists, who get this, you know, FaceTime, you know, with the congressman. And unfortunately, that is just the stark reality. Now, like I said, I'm going to talk to lobbyists because at the end of the day, maybe they got something important. I'm not opposed to the oil and gas industry. In fact, I am probably way more pro fossil fuel. And I don't even like that word because I don't believe it's fossils at all. You know, I am very pro hydrocarbon. That's really what it is.
Right.
I want to see more oil. I want to see more gas. You know, I want to see more coal, you know, being used to create electricity. I believe that that is the cheapest, most efficient, most reliable form of energy that exists. I'm not opposed to nuclear, but nuclear takes forever to build a plant because of all the hoops you got to jump through. Mm-hmm. But we could put up natural gas power plants. We could put coal burning power plants, and we should be doing those. We should be building a ton of them. You know, why the hell are we paying the prices that we are for electricity? Because they keep blocking it. They keep blocking the funding of these things. But we need to not be reliant upon BlackRock to fund our investments here in the state. We need to be utilizing our own natural resources, becoming economically independent and investing in our own infrastructure. Why do we have to build a pipeline? We should not have to send a pipeline anywhere. We should be using that natural gas here,
right,
generate electricity with it, and then we can send electricity throughout the entire power grid and lower the price for electricity in West Virginia and maybe use that as a means of attracting new companies, new manufacturing plants, and people. Because who wants to pay, you know, $1,000 a month for your electric bill?
Nate, can you touch base just real quick in maybe 2 minutes or less and talk about your raid?
So, oh, wow. 2 minutes or less.
Okay, I'll give you 3.5.
All right, they came to my house. They knocked on the door. I call it a Mar-a-Lago style raid. They didn't come and kick in my door. You know, I didn't get Roger Stoned. I got Mar-a-Lago'd. They knocked on the door. They asked if they can come in. I said yes, because I figured, you know, I was a protected whistleblower. So I told him, I said, I'm a protected whistleblower and under the Intelligence Community Whistleblower Protection Act. And then the guy, you know, started getting into interrogating me. I should have shut up at that point and said, you know, I'm not saying another thing without my lawyer, but I even made that mistake because up until that point, I had no idea just how corrupt it was. I thought, you know, I have protection. These guys aren't going to abuse their power, but they did. They went through my entire house. They served me a search warrant that was illegal. They went through my entire house. They did not even give me the Schedule B of the search warrant, which would have told me what they were allowed to take. They took things that were not on it, like my wife's diaries. I've never even seen her diaries, but they took pages out of her diaries.
They took the pages out, or they took the whole diaries?
No, they took the pages out.
And
because
left the
when
book?
We got our stuff back. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my.
And, yep. They also did things like, you know, they went through my wife's, you know, panty drawer, you know, just like, you know, they did with Melania. Yeah.
They must have a thing about women's panty drawers. I mean,
I guess so.
It's kind of commonality.
They wrote down all of the serial numbers of all the guns that I own, which I no longer own. I got rid of every single one of them and bought new guns.
Hey,
you know, it was a nightmare. And then after that, that was just the beginning. The nightmare continued for several months, actually for a couple of years. I'm quite certain that they spied on me with Section 702 of FISA illegally for more than a couple of years, maybe even had a FISA search warrant. I know because I've got friends on the inside that told me, you know, you're being surveilled very intrusively. And they weren't going to tell me because they want to violate, you know, they were on the edge of even telling me that. But they said, actually, it wasn't, they didn't talk to me directly. They talked to somebody else and said, hey, you're being spied on very intrusively. And when this gentleman asked, you know, well, what do you mean? And they said, well, it's because of your relationship with somebody named Dennis Nathan Kane. So it's the two-hop rule, which means it was FISA. FISA courts were involved. So that went on for 2 years. Okay, that was 2 years later, after I blew the whistle. And then they came after my kids. They, you know, went to my daughter's school and pulled her out of class, interrogated her. They went to my son when my son was he was working towards a apprenticeship program with the NSA, and while he was under a polygraph, they went and visited him and interrogated him, which is illegal. They went after that. I'm pretty dang sure that they tried to set up my my oldest son, who's got autism. They tried to honeypot him, and luckily he didn't fall for it. And you know, and I caught on to it. But it was just like one thing after another, man. These people are evil.
So when these clowns showed up at your house the first time, I think you said there were 15 or 16 of them. What was that like? How did they come rolling up on like their mopeds or their
no,
their scooters?
They pulled up. It was a white, you know, unmarked car. I mean, I knew as soon as they stepped out of the vehicle, I see they had the, you know, the standard, you know, FBI haircut. They walked up to the front door. I was sitting up, you know, in my office, and I could see down on the driveway. And so I knew. So I went downstairs. They knocked on the door. I opened the door, and you know, I asked to see their badges, and then I let them in. But they, and I figured they probably had a search warrant. But they, you know, they, after he, you know, he basically talked to me for a little bit, then he said, all right, well, just so you know, I have a search warrant and, you know, and I'm here about a thumb drive and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, started asking questions and, you know, then they must've got on their radios and they were probably all parked around the corner, because then all of a sudden my driveway was filled with cars. You know, and you had 16 agents in my house going through, taking pictures of everything, you know, going through all my drawers, going through everything. They took every single piece of electronic equipment that I had. I didn't get it back for 5 years. When we petitioned them to get it back, they said, look, we got, you know, more important things like terrorists to go after. And we'll get around to your stuff when we get around to it. It was sitting on some bench in Quantico. You know, they cracked my phone to get into it. It was cut in half. And so they likely used because I wouldn't give them the PIN number to my stuff. And so they likely went in there and used a laser to, you know, to basically count the atoms as they were going across to try to get into my phone. It was horrible. And then for 5 years, I had it hanging over my head that they could indict me at any time. I had to hire a lawyer. You know, it ended up costing about $198,000. Thank God a generous woman down in Nashville wrote a check for $200,000 and paid for my entire legal defense. And between eight lawyers, it came to $198,000.
Wow.
It's no wonder, you know, you wonder why people don't blow the whistle. That's why. They ruined it.
So, and you had mentioned before the whole lawfare thing. You know, I'm sitting there. So lawfare is one piece of this. But you had mentioned several things that they did that was illegal. In a normal world, you would think you'd have recourse legally, but yeah. Let me be clear.
Let me be clear about something. The majority of the agents that were in my home were decent guys. They didn't do anything wrong. They were just following orders. They were, you know, following the search warrant. I don't have any issue with them. It's one guy. It was the guy leading the raid, who ended up going and doing all these interviews with different people to try to find dirt on me by himself without another agent, which violated department policy. He went to my second oldest son, who had just gone through a nasty divorce, went to his ex-father-in-law's house and tried to get him to give dirt on me. And that guy told him to go pound sand. And he said, why are you always trying to destroy people's lives? And the guy turns around, the FBI agent turns around and goes, oh, you just watch too much Fox News. So this guy clearly had a bias and he clearly had something out to get me. He was trying to find anything that he could. Now, mind you, 5 years later, I was never charged, not even a ding on my security clearance. I still hold and maintain a top secret clearance, which I've held for 26 years.
Wow.
Because I didn't do anything wrong. But they certainly tried to paint me as a disloyal American, as some domestic terrorist, as somebody who had guns laying all over his house, which was a lie. I had all my guns locked up when they came to the house. But they told, you know, he told people, other people, because I got word back from them that I had guns laying all over my house. You know, it was just incredible what this guy did. You know, it's just unbelievable. And so when I finally reported it, because after 2 years of this crap, I said, you know what, I've had enough. And I contacted Lindsey Graham's office, because he had just been appointed as the Senate Judiciary Chairman, And the Senate judiciary has got a lot of power. I will tell you that much. Chuck Grassley was in charge of it for a long time, and they do a lot to protect whistleblowers. But when I went to, I talked to his investigative counsel, and I don't know what, you know, I mean, I told him everything. And afterwards, 2 weeks later, that agent was no longer an agent.
Huh.
I'm sure they probably forced him into retirement because, you know, he wasn't disciplined as far as I know, but he was probably told, you know, you need to retire.
They'd probably give him a big fat bonus to retire, and we paid for that too.
So when they showed up, Nate, were they all dressed in like suits, or were they like in full battle tactical gear, ready to just take you down because you're a terrorist?
No. They were all wearing like khakis and dress shirts and, you know, their FBI jackets and all that. So
unbelievable. That's the longest 3.5 minutes we've done on an interview, Randy, but
it's all good stuff.
Nate, what piece of parting advice or action steps would you give our viewers here today as we get ready to near the end of this episode?
Well, what I would suggest that people need to do is you need to contact your representatives first on this 702 thing. You do need to contact them, voice your opinion, let them know that you do not want the FBI to be allowed to continue to violate the Constitution and violate people's Fourth Amendments, that as long as there is no accountability for those people who have abused it, meaning there's nobody being put on trial and sent to jail for violating, you know, deprivation of rights under color of law, as long as that doesn't exist, they should never have access to that tool ever. So that's one of the things that I would suggest that people need to do. People need to support candidates like myself and others in, you know, around the country. You know, even if you live in a place like, you know, New York or California or Oregon, you know, I've got, those are some of the largest donors that I have are actually in California and New York. And why is that? Because again, you know, they can't, there's no chance of getting a decent person, you know, elected in their district, but they can certainly support, you know, other members of Congress. And I'm telling you, you know, folks, look, every dime that I brought in has come in because of the generous donations of individuals. I am not, you know, I am not your typical candidate. You know, I have, and I would say I'm not even your typical grassroots candidate. I mean, I'm somebody that actually has proven that I will go the extra mile to save our country and to expose corruption. No other candidate that I know of in this race, you know, can say that. Now, there may be one or two out there, I don't know, but I'm just saying it's like, you know, that right there, the knowledge that I have of national security matters are pretty, it's pretty intense. I mean, I know a lot about that. I've had a career in national security that's lasted for 26 years. I understand cybersecurity backwards and forwards. That's my forte. And believe me, cybersecurity is going to be a big issue, you know, going into the future here. We've already had some major attacks. And of course, you know, the World Economic Forum, right? Klaus Schwab, you know, that Nazi up there has been talking about, oh, the next thing that's coming is going to be a cyber attack. You know, I mean, it's just ridiculous. You know, these people, they always announce what their intentions are.
Because they're Satanist.
So I think it's important that we are going to, it's very important that we have somebody that has an understanding of cybersecurity and cyber warfare and cyber defensive operations, which I do in Congress. I think it's important that we have somebody that understands the corruption in Congress that can fight, that can get on these committees like the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, you know, like some of these other committees that are, you know, the Weaponization Committee, things like that. You know, I actually have a background and an understanding of those things. I'm an Army veteran, you know, so I understand veterans issues. I'm also a small business owner. So I understand this, you know, how, like I said, how these regulations and taxes, you know, are affecting, you know, entrepreneurship. You know, and the fact is I've come from nothing. I mean, there was a time where, you know, we didn't have anything. And I mean, we were broke and, you know, we were, you know, we basically were eligible for food stamps, you know, so I've been, and I've come from that to, I would say, you know, to become moderately successful. And so I've lived, I can understand a lot of people in their different stations in life. The only thing I've never been is an elite, and I will never be. And so, you know, if people will keep that in mind, if people will consider donating to my campaign, I have a shot at this. I really do believe I can win. But what it means is it means that I've got to put in the due diligence and the hard work and labor of getting out there and pressing the flesh and talking to the people and working on the issues that matter to them now. That's why I'm working on things like the Parents' Bill of Rights. That's why I'm working on things like the mineral rights issues and these issues that are important to the people of my district, like things like in Payden City, we have a major water crisis there where they have contamination of their groundwater. And so their aquifers got tetrachloroethylene in it. So 2 days ago, I drove 3 hours to Pittsburgh and then 3 hours back home in one night so that I can meet with a gentleman who owns a company that creates enzymes that can eat tetrachloroethylene. And I delivered to him a gallon of untreated water from Payden City. And I also gave him the maps of the tributaries and the, you know, the aggregate aquifer and all of that. Now, I'm not making a dime from that. Okay. I don't have any financial interest in it, nor will I, because that would be inappropriate, but I am working for the people of West Virginia already. And if this works, this will be a process that could be repeated all over the country where we have major problems.
Wow. Yeah. That'd be great.
Water. And so, I'm working on issues already, you know, and I'll be honest with you, you know, where did I get the idea of that? Donald Trump. Before he took office, what did he do? He was making phone calls. He was doing deals. He was setting up things. I talked to another company that is involved in coal gasification, where they can take coal and turn it into jet fuel and gasoline and all kinds of other, you know, derivatives. And why? Because we obviously need something that can expand our coal market here in West Virginia. We've got massive amounts of coal. And if we could actually do some other things with it besides just, you know, burning it in power plants, which I'm not opposed to, but actually open up the market to so that we can make more, you know, we can actually have more markets for coal here in the United States. And we can create things like gasoline and we can create things like jet fuel and things like that. That creates a whole new market. Not to mention that this process by which they do it, they remove all the sulfur, all the mercury and all the other things that are not good that are in, that are in the coal, it's able to remove all that. And so, you know, I'm all for technology. I'm all for clean, energy. I'll tell you what, there's nothing clean about windmills and solar.
No.
The fact it's unreliable. The rare earth minerals that are required for solar. In fact, they've got cadmium inside these things. If they have a hailstorm and it cracks, it's going to leak radioactive material on the ground below it. And if you have these, most of these things are being brought in from China, which we're helping our enemies. The graphite that's used to make these windmills, their propellers, it's non-biodegradable. So basically, you can't recycle it. So what do you do with it? They have to bury these in landfills. Now, there are some companies that are talking about grinding up, turning it into some sort of cement. The point is, though, is they have to heavily subsidize the supposed, you know, green energy. And I say supposed, they have to heavily subsidize it to even make it profitable. All the while, we have clean energy through, clean coal burning and, natural gas plants. We got tons of natural gas and coal. We could actually be creating tons of electricity and having energy independence and economic independence from the federal government here in West Virginia. That's what I want to see. I want to see West Virginia become a powerhouse, an economic powerhouse, and be able to basically give, you know, the double barrel middle finger to the federal government. Say, I don't want your money. I don't want your school budget. I don't want your money for, you know, all these other things. Instead of being a taker state, you know, we chart our own path and say, you know what? We don't want anything from you. We're going to, you know, take care of our own stuff. So that way we can do things the way we want to do it here.
Exactly.
We're not going to teach your, you know, your CRT, your DEI. We don't want your green energy crap. We will make sure that we have clean energy, clean water, clean air, clean soil. And we're going to live our lives the way we want to live here in West Virginia, you know, believing in God, family, and country.
I love it. Well, Nate King, give our viewers, our listeners, and our audience your website where they go to support you. I know if you're getting support from California, New York, and the great state of Oregon, I know there are a lot of great people in those states. I know there's a lot of lefties, but there are a lot of great conservatives in those states, too. And if they're supporting you, I'd like for our viewers to do the same thing. Tell us where we can go to support you and find out what your journey is on.
Sure. So you can go to my website. It's natekaneforwv.com, or you can also get there by going to natekane.win. That's NATECAIN.WIN or Nate Kane, the number 4WV.com. When you go there, there's a link up in the upper right-hand corner that says donate here. That's the easiest way to donate to me. It takes you to Anadot where you can, you know, make a donation. And it's all set up so that FEC and all their regulations, which are worse than the IRS, I don't get in trouble, you know, going that route. But if you still insist, some people are old fashioned, they insist on, you know, mailing a check. There's instructions right there on how you can do that. And that's fine too. Well, that's so awesome. That's the best way that people can support me. All of the interviews that I do, I post in my, on my website. You can go to the media section. You'll see this interview there eventually. And you will also be able to see all the other interviews that I've done. You can read my story in great detail. You know, there's a lot of things that you can find out about my campaign there. I've got a lot of white papers and things like that that I've written, position papers. And, you know, and ultimately, you know, the biggest thing that people can do for me is pray for me. I really do believe that this is a spiritual battle more 100%, than
100%.
Amen. Totally. You know, we are facing, you know, when you've got, when you have people who are trying to normalize pedophilia, who have extended abortion all the way up to the day of birth and even afterwards, that are pushing transgender nonsense on our children and trying to confuse them and trying to, you know, basically hurt them. When you have, you know, people that find these things acceptable, it's clear that we're not dealing with just natural progression of liberalism. No, this is demonic. I'll just call it what it is. Mm-hmm. It's a demonic spirit that has taken hold and taken over in many places. And I believe that, you know, that when we see that kind of thing, that, you know, that we're called to pray and call upon God for God to intervene. And we need help. Look, even if you had 435 Nate Kanes in Congress, it would not be enough to reverse the damage that has been done in this country. We are going to need divine help from God. And so I'm asking for everyone to please pray and fast. The next National Day of Prayer is going to fall right before the primary, right before the May primaries. And so there's an opportunity there to pray and ask for God to intervene in our country and to, you know, help those that are righteous to get elected, because we need people in office who have a fear of God. You know, people ask me all the time, you know, how I had the courage to do the things that I did. And I will tell you straight up, that courage came from God. It was not from Nate Kane. You know, I didn't have it in me to do that, but I do fear God. And I know I'm going to be held accountable someday for not only the evil things that I did in life, but also for the things that I could have done that were righteous where I chose not to. And that has always been in the forefront of my mind when I've been in these situations. And that's why I blew the whistle. It's why I did what I did. And I had many, many times I had to pray and ask God, you know, to give me the strength and give me the courage, because I'm not going to lie, I was scared. You know, when you go through that, you got a family to support, and, you know, and you're worried about your life, and you're worried about, you know, even how you're going to survive this. But God got me through it.
So I firmly believe there's going to be a shaking and a change coming in the not too distant future myself.
I think 24 is going to be exciting.
It's going to be great.
I agree.
Beyond
exciting. I agree. I agree with you. I think there's going to be a shaking. I do think that I think we have some hard times ahead, though.
Absolutely. And, yes, I do.
But I think God has not given up on our country.
Absolutely not.
I hear these people say, you know, oh, this place is Sodom and Gomorrah, you know, and our country's going to hell and all this stuff. You know what? That kind of black-pilled nonsense is all, that's what it is. It's nonsense. The fact is that Abraham, he prayed and he pleaded with God, if there were only 10 people, you know, that were righteous in Sodom and Gomorrah, would he have saved it? And the answer was yes, but there weren't 10 people. And so I know we have far more than 10 people in our great nation that are righteous, mm-hmm. you know, and so I know God's not done with our country.
Awesome, I don't think Nate. He would ask. We just want to tell you, thank you so much for coming on here and sharing truth. Thanks for standing up and being a whistleblower and exposing all the corruption. That's one of my favorite three. I think that's going to be my word for 2024 is whistleblower. I love it. I absolutely love it. Nate, one more time, give us your website.
It's Nate Kane, the number 4WV.com. That's NATECAIN, the number 4WV.com.
And I'd like to encourage our viewers and our audience, our listeners, go over there, support Nate, no matter if you're in West Virginia or if you're in Tupelo, Mississippi or Wichita, Kansas. Go there, support Nate, because he's doing some great things to support the true patriots and conservatives of this great nation. Don't you think, Randy?
Yep. And I really appreciate everything you're doing. So I know it's a tough fight and not all of us can do it, but I really appreciate it.
Well, keep up the fight, Nate. We hope to have you back on for further updates and give us a little bit of insight on your journey and who you're exposing next. So we'll help to have you back on, my friend.
God bless you guys.
All right. Take care. God bless you too. Take care. See ya.
Bye.
Thanks for watching another exciting episode of Patriots with Grit. We want to keep you informed. So if you would just go over to patriotswithgrit.com and give us your first name and your email so we can keep you up to date. Also, be sure to subscribe, like, and share so we can keep bringing you truth. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.